Get ready for an emperor has no clothes moment. Ready? There is no Fed in the Federal Reserve System. There are only private banks, which loan the public funny money that the public must pay back with interest using their real money. This web of debt leads us to ask, what can the farmers of North Dakota teach us about money?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 734th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Pleased to have you aboard here today. With me on the boards, we have engineer Dave Michaels. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Folks, there is a there is no Fed in the Federal Reserve System. There are only private banks which loan the public funny money that the public must pay back with interest using their real money. The Federal Reserve System allows the nation's politicians to get their hands on a never-ending stream of cash to give their friends, while forcing our children and grandchildren to pay for it with interest. The United States of America, consequent to this policy, is now over $14 trillion in the red. Some of the nation's states, like California, are so deep in their red that they are, for all intents and purposes, bankrupt. So too are many of the nation's banks, which recently were bailed out by the Federal Reserve to the tune of trillions, which of course will have to be paid back with interest by our children and grandchildren. But wait, there is one state that is operating in the black, North Dakota. And there is one bank that is operating in the black, the Bank of North Dakota. The fact that North Dakota and the Bank of North Dakota are fiscally sound, while the rest of the nation and its money sitter banks are broke, leads us to ask, what can the farmers of North Dakota teach us about money? And here to help us find an answer, we have Ellen Hogston Brown, who is the attorney. She's an attorney, by golly, and author of Web of Debt. Ellen, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks, Michael.
So, Web of Debt. What exactly do you mean by the Web of Debt?
Well, as you point out, all of our money, or virtually all, is created by banks in the form of loans. And so all of our money is debt. And because it is always put out there at interest, they create the principal but not the interest necessary to pay these loans back. So there's always more money owed back than was put out there in the first place. So that means somebody somewhere has to be taking out yet another loan in order to cover the interest. So it is a web of debt that just keeps growing and growing. It's like a parasite.
It's kind of like being a drug addict, right? You know, you take some drugs and you feel good, but then you get let down. And you always get let down farther than you go up, right? So,
yeah.
So you have to take more to feel better, and then more and more and more and more.
And it's actually a pyramid scheme. So it's mathematically unsustainable unless there is an alternative model, and that's what we're...
That's where we're headed today, yeah. Up there in the great state of North Dakota. Well, before we head up to North Dakota, help us to understand how this... I've been told that there is no Fed in the Federal Reserve System. Is that true?
Well, at the top, of course, Ben Bernanke was appointed by... Or the whole Federal Reserve Board is appointed by Congress. But the Federal Reserve System consists of 12 banks, Federal Reserve banks. We have one in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those banks are 100% owned by the banks in their region. So, for example, in New York, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which is the largest and most powerful of the Federal Reserve branches, is owned by about 500 banks. And the biggest would be Chase, Manhattan, and Citigroup.
So then
the government owns zero, like not one share of stock is owned in these Federal Reserve banks, and they are what generate the money for those regions.
So this is really private banks that are making the money. It's not the federal government at all.
No. The only thing the federal government creates in the way of money are coins, and that is limited to about $1 billion out of, as you point out, well, there's $14 trillion debt, but there's also over a $14 trillion M3 money supply. So virtually all of it is bank-created debt.
It really is funny money, isn't it, when it gets right down to it?
Yeah. It's not necessarily a bad system if it were publicly owned. In other words, credits and debits is a reasonable way to run an accounting system. But the problem is, because these debits are privately issued on pretending to have money they don't really have, essentially, or pretending to loan their depositors money when that's not actually how it works. They actually just create the loans on their books. They need the deposits because they have to clear their checks. And so when the checks go out from these loans that they just created, they create a loan, it becomes a deposit in somebody's account. Like if you take out a $500,000 loan for a mortgage, say, they will take that mortgage and put it on one side of their books and call it an asset, and then they'll balance it with a $500,000 debit to themselves, and they'll write that $500,000 into your account, and you will write checks on it, which will then go into some other bank. You'll probably write a $500,000 check to your seller, and that'll go into his bank. Well, that bank will now count that as a $500,000 incoming deposit, but you have a $500,000, or your bank has $500,000 going out, so they have to get $500,000 coming in somehow to clear the check, but they haven't really lent that money coming in. If you are the depositor, or if you put your money in the bank, you never go in and they say, sorry, we just lent your money out to Mr. Smith. You'll have to come back in 30 years when he pays off his mortgage. They always have your money, and yet they purport to have lent your money out, and yet it's always there.
So really, there's no money there at all.
Right. Well, right.
There's some coins.
Yeah.
There
is money in the sense that that's what we consider to be our money. It's an advance. It's bank credit. All of our money is bank credit. But there it's definitely an illusion. It's sleight of hand. They're pretending that their depositors' money's still there at the same time that they just lent it out.
That's good. Now, we hear a lot about derivatives and how the big money center banks have bet hugely on derivatives. But we don't have the slightest idea what the heck anybody's talking about.
Right. Derivatives are bets. That's exactly what they are. They're bets.
So it's like going to the track and saying, I bet this derivative will win.
Right. The advantage of derivatives and why they're so popular among banks and gamblers generally is you don't have to own the horse. You can bet on the horse without owning it. So you can bet on anything. You can bet on the price of tea in China. A very popular thing to bet on is exchange rates. So there's a huge amount of money betting whether currencies will go up or down. It's just an artificial, it's like betting on who will win the World Series or something. It has nothing to do. You don't own any share of the thing that you're betting on. So when we had all these derivative bets placed on mortgages, for example, you could have many more derivative bets riding on a particular mortgage than the mortgage was worth. So I saw somewhere that it was worth more to the bank generally, or whoever set up this whole derivative collateralized debt obligation, financial product, as they say. It was worth more to them if it would default, because you might have 10 derivative bets betting against the thing versus you would only make, if it was a $500,000 mortgage and they pay it off, you make $500,000. But if they default, you could be making 500,000 times.
Wow.
Some substantial sum.
So it's in essence then, it's a way derivatives provide financial speculators a way to vastly leverage the power of their money.
Mm-hmm. In theory, what it is you, what they did when well, this is all very complicated, but there's this separate repo market that it's a separate. it's called the shadow banking system, and uh-huh. it's where most of our money these days is held in these huge funds, which have way more than $250,000. You know, mutual funds, hedge funds, sovereign wealth funds.
We're going to have to hold that.
Funds.
Can you hold that? Well, this is getting immensely complicated. Which is the point here? This is immensely complicated,
yeah.
Our financial system. And it's built on banks loaning money that they really don't have, but they're making up so that they do have it. And when we get back, we're going to ask Ellen Brown the big question, which is, how long can this financial stuff work without anything really being there? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about banks and what we can learn from the farmers of North Dakota. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've learned a lot about banking. So far, we learned that bankers make money. Most of the money in our financial system is made by bankers who make money by taking a piece of a paper and a pencil and they writing the money down on a piece of paper. And there it is. It's money. And then we borrow that money and they take it from one side of their ledger and put it on the other. I think that's the way it works, but I'm not really sure. But then there's the derivatives. And the derivatives, of course, work by betting on things, and then you make a lot of money if you bet that things aren't going to work. And how am I doing, Ellen?
Good.
So, Ellen, it seems like the financial system, you know, system is so complicated that only brilliant people sitting on top of skyscrapers in New York City can figure it out. And when us poor folk kind of look up there and they look down on us and say, just forget it, don't even try to understand it, just trust us. And so we trust them. And so what they do is that they loan our politicians ever more money, and our politicians take that money and they give it to their friends, and then we just keep going further and further and further and further and further in debt. Now we over $14 trillion, and of course our children, our grandchildren are going to have to pay for that. How long is there any incentive for the bankers to not do that?
No, unfortunately. Well, the derivatives are actually like $600 trillion, or depending on how you count it, there could be twice that many in derivatives. I mean, any grade school child can look at those numbers and say that that is not sustainable. There is not that much money anywhere in the world. The whole GDP of all the countries in the world is $60 trillion. So there's at least 10 times that sum in derivatives. And these are just bets on. The whole point of the derivatives thing was to sell off risk. So it was that you could say to investors, don't worry about like these mortgage-backed securities. Don't worry about these mortgages going bad because somebody else has bought the risk. So if they default, somebody else is going to pick up the tab. Well, obviously, that can't work. It is the child looking and seeing that the emperor has no clothes. There's, you can't sell off. Somebody's going to have to bear that risk. And if the whole mortgage market drops, as it just did, who's going to pick up all those losses? There's nobody with that kind of money. Well, so, of course, the government wound up picking up the losses in order to salvage the banking system so that we would have a banking system. But because we allowed the big banks to remain private, they now are just rolling in it. I mean, they are richer than before, and they have more leverage than before and more control of Congress than before. So there's really no way that we're going to break through. I mean, there could easily be another collapse, just like the last one. But we just don't have any. Nobody's listening to us. So that's why our whole suggestion with the Public Banking Institute is we just have to set up a different model on the state level.
Well, that's... I'm all for thinking about anything different than what you just described. So I'm ready to put my money at the Dairy Queen, I guess. Maybe I'd be better off there. Okay, so let's turn to North Dakota. 1919, the farmers of North Dakota got together and said, to hell with all of this, and formed their own bank. And it was started off as kind of like a credit union. You know, we'll just all pool our money together and we'll loan it to each other and we'll live in our own happy little world. And by golly, that bank is still there. And it's the only bank owned by a state in the United States. And it's solvent, as is the state. What on earth is different?
Well, besides everything,
here's
what a sustainable banking system looks like. You, instead of the interest and profits being siphoned off by private investors or private owners or whatever, who then take that money and roll it into more investments and more money making money. In other words, they're not spending it into the economy. They might spend a little for their personal needs, but most of that money is going to get reinvested, which means yet more money making more money. So it's contributing to the parasite part that's just feeding off of the other part. In a sustainable, publicly owned system, such as the Bank of North Dakota, the profits, the interest goes back to the bank, which goes to the state, which is the people. So the bank operates in the public interest. The profits go back to the state, so the people pay. They're the only state that actually cut taxes in the last couple of years since the 2008 collapse. They had the biggest budget surplus they'd ever had in 2009, and they were looking around. They're the only state that's looking around and thinking, should we cut taxes or should we add services or... what should we do with all this excess money that's rolling in? They do have oil there, and some people say that's the reason they're
the Bakken
wealthy.
Field, yeah.
But other states also have oil, and they also attribute their boom to agriculture. Well, lots of other states have agriculture, but the reason they're doing so well with those things is you need infrastructure, and it's the Bank of North Dakota that funds all that infrastructure, and they fund the farmers. They make low-interest loans available to farmers. They guarantee the loans to farmers, not just for their real estate, but for their production facilities and to, you know, add on and to use ethanol. And I mean, they definitely are helping out the farmer. That's one of their programs, energy.
This sounds like the only socialist thing I've ever heard in my life that works. Am I wrong?
Interestingly, they're very, very Republican states.
Well, there's a wonderful irony here, because I know a lot of North Dakotans, having been raised in neighboring Montana, so I know the character of the people, and they're very conservative, and yet here they have the only state-owned bank in the nation.
Well, that's why socialist is a misnomer. It's keep our money in the state, so it's actually a sovereignty issue.
So it's really like local money.
Yeah, exactly. Keep it in our state, working for our people. The only thing socialist about it is that they're doing it together. They're sharing. Well, that's what a government's all about. I mean, if the government doesn't share and help the people, what's the use of it?
Well, it doesn't seem to be working that way with the federal government, does it?
They're so afraid of... It's a bad economic model. They're so afraid of inflation. They could easily solve the whole problem. You know, there is $1.6 trillion in excess reserves sitting on bank accounts, and there's a $1.6 trillion deficit in the budget. Well, had they just written that, I mean, and all that money came from the Federal Reserve originally. It's that quantitative easing one.
So they could just write it.
They could have written it right over to the government and solve the problem.
I love it. Okay, that's what banks do, right? They take things on one side of the ledger and write it to, on the other side of the ledger, and then call it money.
Yeah, well, and I mean, Ron Paul is suggesting that we could fix the deficit just by writing off all the government bonds that the Fed is holding, because they got them by just writing it into an account in the first place. And Ron Paul obviously is very conservative, so.
Yeah. Well, he's also very weird, and he's attracting a lot of attention these days because
he's got some interesting ideas.
He does have some interesting ideas.
You need some people who are thinking here and not just going along with the program.
Well, I have to look elsewhere because I can't understand what those guys in the suits that are sitting on top of Chase Manhattan Bank up there in Manhattan. I can't for the life of me figure out what they're doing. So I have to look around. And when Ellen Brown comes up with this whole notion that the farmers in the state of North Dakota are onto something and have been onto something for a long time, and the state of North Dakota is solvent.
They're
reducing taxes. And the Bank of North Dakota is solvent. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're doing today. We're turning away from that big money center banking district in Manhattan and those boys and girls in those fancy clothes and those high skyscrapers. And we're turning to the state of North Dakota with Ellen Brown, the author of Web of Debt. And we're looking for another way of doing things. And those farmers back in North Dakota in 1919 came up with a different way of doing things. And that's exactly what we're going to look to when we come back from this break. We're going to ask the big question, what can the farmers of North Dakota teach us about money, our money, cold, hard cash, real money? Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Well, folks, back in 1919, the farmers of North Dakota, frustrated, I'm certain, by the power exerted over them by money center banks off in the east, decided to take matters into their own hands, and they formed their own bank, the Bank of North Dakota. And today, that bank is solvent. The state is solvent. Not only solvent, but it's giving money back to the people, reducing taxes. It is a healthy state. And looking at the rest of the country that's so far in debt for over $14 trillion, we're kind of time to start looking around for other ways of doing things. And perhaps those folks, those farmers up in North Dakota, were onto something that we should think about. So that's what we're doing today with Ellen Brown, author of Web of Debt. Ellen, what exactly does the Bank of North Dakota do that's different? Than different than everybody else, I guess.
Well, going back to 1919, that was when the farmers were losing their farms to the Wall Street bankers. It was just like now, like we're experiencing California, where people are losing their homes to the big banks. But then it was a Rockefeller cartel that owned the bank in New York was linked to the railroad, was linked to the granaries that went into North Dakota. So it was all one cartel. I mean, it was literally a cartel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, some people don't like that word, but that's actually what
but
it was.
But when they own the world, right?
Yeah, right. So the farmers were... There are a couple of movies about this, and at first they were Swedish and Norwegian farmers. They didn't even speak English, and they weren't going to have anything to do with any kind of organizing. But when they realized that the granaries were not taking their grain, although it was perfectly good grain, that there was an actual attempt to take their farms unfairly, then they did band together. I mean, they got mad, basically, and they got together. They called it the Nonpartisan League, meaning it was not socialist, and it was not, you know, it wasn't about politics. It was about getting our money back in the state for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got this bank set up, and then they lost the next election, but they had just raised enough money for the bank to fund the bank to capitalize it as they lost the next election. And so the Republicans now had the bank, and they ran it like a bank. So they actually foreclosed on the farmers and stuff that the Nonpartisan League couldn't have done because, you know.
Right.
On their own people, but as there's a movie on this too. But it did get the bank all set up, and then the farmers, of course, were outraged, and they, and then the Nonpartisan League got back in after that, and since then they have run it as a in the public interest. Now, the banks did win to the, it, when they originally set it up, the intent was to have it be a regular commercial bank that would serve, they would take deposits and so forth. But in fact, now it's a banker's bank. So it really does serve the banks, but it serves the banks in North Dakota. So it's set up to be a banker's bank where they help the local banks.
Well, it's so it's kind of like a central bank
in
for North Dakota.
Yes, and the local banks are the ones that are being squeezed out now. The big Wall Street banks are taking over. I mean, where I live, there aren't any. My two local banks both got gobbled up by, one's now Chase Bank and the other's U.S. Bank.
Right, right.
So, and they're not making loans to businesses, small businesses. They used to have credit lines to small businesses, and they're, now you have to get a credit card, which is twice the interest rate.
So the cartel now owns everything again except in North Dakota.
And they're not in, in our state. That's the thing. So, yeah. So a banker's bank that serves the local banks, they have more local banks per capita in North Dakota than any other state. So, and they love the Bank of North Dakota. The Bankers Association support, endorses the Bank of North Dakota. It's not a competitive thing.
So they're working together.
But it's
together,
a local
then.
Thing, working together, helping them. But the Bank of North Dakota also makes low-interest loans to farmers. They participate in the loans. They guarantee the loans. They buy down the interest rate. So
let me ask you this then. If it's a state, if it's the only state-owned bank in the United States, what keeps it from getting into the hands of politicians in the, I mean, here in California, our politicians have run the state into the ground. And now they're owned by the public sector unions who are not going to allow them to do anything but keep going into the ground. So if California or other big states that are in trouble have their own banks, what would prevent them from just going to hell faster than they already are?
Well, you need to put that in the legislation, but we have two retired Bank of North Dakota people on that are working with us with the Public Banking Institute, which I'm now the president of, and they stress that you've got to have this bank run by bankers. You know, this is not a development program. This is not, you're not.
It's not a public do-gooder thing.
No, and if it's not a sound loan, don't make the loan. I mean, you need bankers in there that are operating it as a, something that will serve to make money, so, you know, like any bank does. But you're using the tools of a bank. So there's one thing we haven't talked about that really is the secret of this bank. As all banks do, all banks are able to create money. I mean, mm-hmm. they create credit, money in the form of credit, which is what all our money is. So we're not just talking about taking the state's revenues and relending it. That's a revolving fund, and we've already got that. We've got an infrastructure bank. But we're talking about taking the state's revenues and generating new credit from that. And right now we're giving that credit away to Wall Street, and they are not giving it back to us. They are speculating with it, et cetera. If they were
right,
lending
buying,
it back to
they're,
us,
they're
fine.
Buying derivatives.
Among other things, yeah. So with your own bank, here's the simple example of why this is a no-brainer. And we probably wouldn't do this with the bank, but let's say if we had the same amount of deposits per capita as the Bank of North Dakota has, they have $4,000 per capita in the bank, and it virtually all came from the state itself. So we have 37 million people. If you multiply that by 4,000, you get 148 billion. So let's, and they have an equivalent sum in loans. So let's say basically you were covering your loans, you're creating an equivalent sum in loans as you had in deposits. So if you use that whole 148 billion to buy municipal bonds at 5%, you would get $7 billion a year in interest. So we're basically giving that $7 billion away to Wall Street. If we kept the $7 billion, that is what we pay in interest. The state pays an interest on its debt. 50% of that debt is interest, so almost 50%. If we had been funding our debt all along, we would have saved $70 billion in the state.
I don't suppose you're very popular on Wall Street.
I haven't really gotten any grief from them yet. I don't think we're kind of under the radar here.
Under the radar here, and here we are holding up the flag. Well, okay, let's go to the phones. Folks, today we're talking with Ellen Brown about the possibility of a state-owned bank. Oh, my goodness, socialism. But is it really? Is it all this kind of stuff, socialism, when it gets... Isn't that what government is all about, is combining our efforts to do something. And up there in North Dakota, they did do something back in 1919. Farmers got tired of being squeezed by the big money center banks, and they said, we're going to take care of ourselves now. So they set up their own bank, and fumbling about, they continued to do that. And today, the Bank of North Dakota and the state of North Dakota are in the black, and we are all in the red. What can we learn from those farmers? Folks, phone numbers today, you can talk with Ellen, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Well, folks, hate to tell you this, but there is no Fed in the Federal Reserve System. There are only private banks which loan the public funny money that the public must pay back with interest using their real money. So this leads us to ask Ellen Brown, who is the author of Web of Debt, What Can the Farmers of North Dakota Teach Us About Real Money? And you are invited to ask her as well. You may do so by calling 800-624-2665 or 831-479-1080. Let's go to Teresa. Teresa, welcome to the food chain.
Thank you. Hi, Michael. Hi, Ellen. This is Teresa Caraggio.
Yes.
Oh, hi.
And I wanted to give Ellen an update. Since the time that Kevin Spitzer and I interviewed her on the university station, I've been teaching a neighborhood economics class based around her book. And Ellen, everybody who reads your book says that it's a life changer, that it completely shifts the paradigm.
Does it tell what those people do in those big money center banks in New York City?
It does, but we haven't gotten that far yet. Right now, we're still dealing with the history of it. And a resource that might be useful for people who aren't local to Santa Cruz is that we have a blog about the class. It's called Global Economics, which is local in a global context. And it's at universcity.us. That's universcity.us.
All right, Teresa, thank you very much.
Can I ask about, though, the federal audit?
Yeah, go ahead.
That since we've been doing this class, we're now working on the federal income tax, and Kevin and I on 4th of July did a show going a layer deeper than the Constitution and talking about the anti-federalists and their warnings about what would happen with the income tax. So I wanted to talk to Ellen about how it really is a bipartisan issue, that being on both the university station and...
Well, what is the question for Ellen?
Is she aware of the bipartisan effort right now to do an audit of the Fed?
Ah, there you go. Ron Paul question.
Yes.
Good. Thank you, Teresa.
Yeah.
Ellen? Audit the Feds. What would we find?
Well, they actually did. There was a lawsuit brought by Bloomberg News and a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, and they prevailed. And so last December, the Fed had to cough up its numbers, and it showed that they had actually advanced $12.3 trillion for the banks. So that was very, very informative. But I think that in the existing act, I think they're supposed to reveal what they're up to 2 years later. Like, they don't tell you right away. So it's kind of like old news. It's like learning what happened to Kennedy or something.
Yeah, and by the way, what did happen to Kennedy? Never mind. Let's go to Margaret. Margaret, welcome to the food chain. Folks, phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Go ahead, Margaret.
Hi, I'm going to go out and get that book right away. So thank you, Michael Olson, and your author here. It's fabulous. I was wondering if she's ever been interviewed on Alex Jones' show.
I was, yes.
Oh, that's what I thought, yeah. Okay, well, you know, I really respect the people of North Dakota and their work ethic and the fact that they're number one in the country for so many things, including the growth of hemp, which is legal there to grow. And hemp is not marijuana. It's not pot. It is hemp, no THC. But the feds keep shutting down the hemp farms there in North Dakota, I understand. I'm very concerned about North Dakota with its new governor, who is a rabid genetic modified seed, a GMO Roundup Ready Monsanto sellout. And I'm very concerned that the farmers there in North Dakota are going to fall for this New World Order trap that this governor is setting as an example for the farmers there in North Dakota with GMO.
Well, that's a very interesting question, Margaret. Let's have Ellen respond to it. Thank you very much for the call. Ellen, what do you think?
Well, I wasn't...
Is that North Dakota governor falling for that GMO crap?
I wasn't aware of that, but I'll look that up. I mean, that is alarming.
Well, you know, Margaret raised a question that really has been nagging me, and that's the ethic of the farmer and the conservative ethic. I mean, not politically necessarily, but how farmers by nature are conservative and not prone to bet on, derivatives, I guess, or other fancy things that nobody can understand. And I guess, you know, farmers are by nature gamblers because they have to put their time, their money, and their know-how at risk into the ground and face up to Mother Nature, and maybe things work and maybe they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still very, very conservative. Now, isn't that really what's going on with respect to North Dakota and the Bank of North Dakota, as opposed to the rest of the craziness that we see in the banking world? Don't we see that here in North Dakota we have some plain, honest people making sound financial investments instead of people that have just completely flying off the handle in craziness?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the original derivative does go back to farming because for the reason
right?
you said
right.
that the farmers needed
hedge
the money now.
Hedge their bets.
And they weren't sure what kind of corn crop they were going to get or whatever. So they would sell the crop ahead of time, and whatever it was. And so the person taking the risk would be the investor who would buy the crop. But where they messed up the whole, I suppose they facilitated that selling off of risk by having this very fluid market. But what they've allowed, you know, is it's all numbers to the people in Wall Street. They're just looking at numbers on a screen, and they're gambling with these numbers. They're totally divorced from the land and the
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. And those people in North Dakota are still there. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Ellen Brown. We have a few minutes to go and so much to cover, but you can participate. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, unlike us, those folks up in North Dakota live very close to the earth. They've got their fingers in the ground, their crops in the earth. And so they have this conservative bent, not necessarily politically speaking, but financially speaking. And so they're solvent, and their bank is solvent, and we are swimming in a sea of red ink. So the question is, can we learn from them? Can we do what they have done? Ellen Brown?
Well, we do have a bill pending right now, AB 750, Assembly Bill 750. It has sailed through the Assembly, and it just passed the Senate Banking Committee last week. So that's what it has to go to next, is the Senate, for a vote. But it's a bill for a feasibility study to look into whether this model would work for California.
So we're going to see if it's feasible even to think about it, right?
Yeah, right. But it does spread the idea, and it gives us an opportunity to get a lot of information out there. It is one of those ideas that's a little sophisticated, and so you couldn't just do an initiative, you know.
Right.
You couldn't just go into your grocery store and have people sign an initiative understand it.
What does Ellen Brown think?
Oh, I think we should definitely have one. I mean, we could have the largest commercial bank in the world with the capital base of, well, there's $200 billion just in CalPERS. There used to be $360 billion, and they lost it on Wall Street. So they
betting
can't do any
derivatives,
worse than
probably.
Putting their money in Wall Street, right.
Yeah.
So why not put that money as an investment, an equity investment? They're not going to do this, I know, but I'm just saying that the state has a lot of capital and a lot of deposits. So they have the two things you need in order to generate your own credit. We should be making our own instead of giving it away to Wall Street.
All right, really quickly, go ahead.
How would the Glass-Steagall legislation in Congress fit in with this? Wouldn't it be a good step in the right direction?
Thank you, Art.
It would definitely be a step in the right direction. It was Glass-Steagall in the 30s. All these protections were put in place to keep the bankers from speculating with depositors' money, and that's what Glass-Steagall was. It separated the depository function of banks from the investment function, and then Glass-Steagall was repealed in 1999, and since then we've seen what happens when you allow banks to gamble with our money.
They gambled with our money and lost it all.
Yeah, and we the taxpayers had to come in and bail them out.
Liberty, go ahead quickly.
Yeah, the ancient Jews had a tradition called the Jubilee, in which all debts were forgiven and everybody started from scratch. How about a one-time Jubilee?
Or maybe one every 7 years. Ellen?
Yeah, well, you could definitely, I mean, the problem with a Jubilee for every, the trouble is you're going to hurt the private creditors who are holding the, let's say, the bond.
People would be very careful about where they lent money, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but I mean, they're, you know, grandmothers with the savings in these bonds, they're going to get wiped out too. So it's not going to be fairly distributed. But you could definitely do a Jubilee on the Fed's money. I mean, all the money that the Fed has put out there was created as...
by the Feds.
Yeah, just by writing it into the books. And so you could write that off. And write off that portion of the government's debt. I mean, it's just foolish that we're in debt to ourselves.
Ellen Brown, thank you very much. Folks, the book Web of Debt, pick it up, get out of debt, earn real money, and spend it. Thank you so much, Ellen. And thank you all out there for tuning in. More next week, What's Eating What Radio. Do stay tuned.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.